Welcome to Our Future Skies in partnership with AIG. I'm John Strickland. This is a podcast where we gaze into our crystal ball, we peer through the mist, looking into the future and what it may hold for the airline business. It's an industry that has always been prone to shocks and upheaval, whether they be natural or man-made, and it's certainly the case now, and I'm sure it will continue to be with ups and downs over the years ahead. One thing that won't go away, though, is the massive challenge of sustainability that the industry is confronting. Now, with this in mind, the question at stake today is, where can we imagine that the industry might be in 10 or 20 years from now, and what factors and influences will shape its trajectory? To get answers and informed perspectives on this, I'm talking with industry leaders, tapping into their wide experience and bringing their thinking to our podcast. In this episode, we're going to hear from an airline based in one of the world's leading and rapidly growing economies, and that's India. It's going to be a real powerhouse of the 21st century. And yet, it's a country where, despite its size and population, aviation has until now played perhaps a smaller role than we might expect. India's largest carrier today, and one with big ambitions, is IndiGo. And my guest on this episode is the airline CEO, Peter Elbers, who has been in post since late 2022. But he previously had a long career at KLM, where he was also CEO. So welcome to Our Future Skies, Peter.
Thank you, John.
Now, I mentioned your long career at KLM, where you were CEO for around about 8 years until leaving in 2022. And as you know, we overlapped in that time. We didn't know each other. I knew your name. I had colleagues based at Stansted, where I worked for KLM UK. We were always talking about Peter Elbert, so I knew of you, but we didn't meet until I subsequently left. But as I mentioned, you had really wide experience. I think you really started, if I'm not mistaken, on the front line, on the ramp at Amsterdam Schiphol. You had time in commercial functions and time around the globe for KLM as well, including time, I think, in Japan. Is that a very brief précis of your time? Do you want to elaborate a bit on that?
Well, it is, John. And again, thanks for having me in the podcast today. I'm sorry we didn't have the opportunity to meet up back then. But you're right. Yeah, I started back in 92, really, at KLM, at the ground loading department at Schiphol Airport. And I'm blessed with all the opportunities which came along those many years. And then after 22 years in different roles and functions, indeed in 2014, I was asked by the board to come up as the CEO of the company. And if I may phrase it like that, in those 8 years, I had the highlight of KLM 100 years in 2019 and quickly followed by the dark days of COVID thereafter. That was my 30-year stint at KLM, and I left when actually COVID was over, and I had 8 years as CEO, and I joined the wonderful company of IndiGo.
Well, I remember thinking about time when you left. I mean, whether it's my own knowledge of you, and we had met by then, or colleagues who had also worked closely with you, that maybe if you were cut, you would bleed KLM blood by the length of that career. KLM and you were one and the same. So I wondered where you would go. And of course, you went relatively quickly to IndiGo. And you know, we both share a bit of that KLM history, both Europeans. So tell me, what has it been like to go from what I would term, you know, old Europe, you know, with a number of challenges around, not least affecting KLM, to what seems to me to be one of the most vibrant parts of the world with a lot of energy? It must be a complete contrast.
Well, yeah, to some extent it is, and to other extent it's probably more similar than one may feel like. You know, the growth levels are obviously starkly different, and especially the growth levels we realize with IndiGo are growth levels unheard of in Europe. So that's very different. The age of the company, I mean, KLM was a 100-plus-year-old company, mm-hmm. With a great history and legacy and achievement over that that century, really. And IndiGo is yet to turn 18 coming August, so that's also something very different. Then clearly KLM was the basis of hub and spoke, and companies from all over the world were coming to look at hub and spoke, and that has turned Amsterdam into an airport and KLM into an airline much larger than its home market itself would justify. And IndiGo is having 13 different bases in that massive country called India. Having said that, I think the similarity is there's the passion and the commitment of the people is very similar, yet the culture is different and the backgrounds are different. But at the end of the day, I'm a strong believer that the aviation industry is a people's business, and I see a lot of that drive and that enthusiasm and that commitment from frontline staff, from people at the offices, basically from through all the different ranks of the company. I see it there as well. So I've been able to blend in very quick. And you're right, I left in June, and I joined in actually in August and officially September. So I didn't leave too much time in between, and I'm glad I did it actually. So I moved from one blue airline to the other blue airline. So that blue blood came in handy, so to speak.
Very good. Yeah, and as you said, culturally, I'll be honest, Peter, I've never been to India. I speak to a lot of young Indians. I have a kind of group of mentees these days, and about half of them are Indians in the industry. And I'll make reference to them as we go along. But it seems to me, not only is it a vast country, but its culture is far from homogenized. Many different languages, religions. And for a European to, if you like, parachute into that could be a very difficult thing to do. I look at your LinkedIn posts and I see you there. You're covered in multiple colors of powder on your face in a holy festival, or you're wearing the Nauru jacket, which I learned about because of a reaction to you wearing that in the company. And I guess that's an important thing. It's intangible, but as you said, it's about people, and you've genuinely seem to have warmed to that and relishing it. I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I feel very much part of that, and you're absolutely right. It's a country stretching 3,200 kilometers from north to south and 3,000 kilometers from east to west, with an incredible variety and diversity of people, languages, food. And people jokingly say that every 50 kilometers, not only language changes, but also food changes. And in the Indian culture, that's an important part. I think what I find extremely energizing really is the fact that there's a lot of energy in the country, and people really want to move forward. And I guess different countries, or if you wish, continents, go through those phases where there's a strong belief that tomorrow is going to be a better day. And that's that belief I see there, and probably very much so for aviation in India. And think about that. I mean, this company, IndiGo, started 18 years ago with one single flight from Delhi to Guwahati onto Imphal, and today where we are, and that drive. So I'm really feeling as a fish in a pond, if that's the correct way of speaking, in that part. And I've been welcomed very much everywhere, and warmly welcomed really. And immerse yourself in the culture is so much more rewarding, and I genuinely enjoy that. I'm happy to be part of it, and yeah, from a European background, of course you need to sort of change your mind and tune your mind to certain things, but again, it has been for me a very smooth and very energizing transfer.
Well, let's take a look at this young adolescent, you could say, airline, but adolescent, but behaving in a very mature way if we look at bottom line results. Let's take a look at the airline, and let's take a look at the Indian market. I'm sure there'll be many Indian listeners to the podcast who understand this, but there'll be many who do not. I mean, the airline, as you said, started 18 years ago, but in the last year, you flew over 100 million passengers. You've got over 360 planes. You've just recently, before we recorded this podcast, announced substantial profits for last year. And I note your slogans. You talk about towards new heights and across new frontiers. You talk about giving wings to the nation by connecting people and aspirations. I mean, it's a very dynamic company, Peter.
Well, it is, and I mean, when the company was founded back in 2006, I think the company and the founders at that point in time had a philosophy that India was deserved really an airline, and a low cost airline. The way it was positioned back then was a pure low cost airline, but not a low quality airline. So they created a statement with three customer promises: on time performance, which back then in India was not a given. On time performance, a courteous and hassle-free service, including clean planes and clean lavatories and so on, and affordable fares. And that in a country where just a very tiny percentage of the population was flying and the main competitors were trains, this affordable fares was incredibly important. So that philosophy was deeply rooted in the company and a contribution. And the execution really of those customers' promises were done very, very well. And that made IndiGo to a fast growth airline all the way up to COVID. Then COVID came and it stopped like everywhere else. It created a big dent in profits and sort of washed away a lot of the good results of the years before. So when I came in 22, after speaking to the major shareholder and the board, and you know, we felt this is the time for India. India is on the growth trajectory. The country is really moving forward. And India needs airlines matching the size and the potential of the country, really. So I thought, and it didn't take much time, actually, to come up with that slogan, towards new heights and across new frontiers. And basically addressing the two ambitions. One is to make sure that we continue to go to new heights in terms of customer numbers, in terms of customer appreciation, in terms of all the milestones and achievements, but also across new frontiers when it comes to geographical scope. The company had a very strong, very, very dominant domestic orientation. And with the rise of India, we see that more and more international travel is taking place. And today, firstly, that's still has a low penetration number, and secondly, it's been taken to a large extent by foreign carriers. So these two elements were the foundations of the strategy, and we embarked on that immediately in 22. And I guess that's where I feel so much at home in both India and IndiGo is, mm-hmm. you know, the moment you put such a strategy in place, all wheels start turning and start delivering results, and the great work by the teams and the people are really delivering that.
Very exciting, Peter. Well, let's go a bit deeper into it. You've got a big order book. I want to put that aside just for a moment, but you're going to grow towards 1,000 aircraft by the end of a decade. But let's look at the dynamics again of India and some of the things you say there support that. I mean, it's a large country, a large population, but I know, you know, passenger numbers are projected to double by 2030. There's going to be a rise in the number of airports to over 220 airports in the country. The thing that's always fascinated me as a former network planner in airlines is this massive Indian diaspora. There are many large Indian communities in many parts of the world, including in the UK where I am, but in Asia, in the US and Canada, and people wanting to travel. And the other figure about a growing middle class. And then if we think about regional cities in India, you know, you might think of a regional city in Holland or the UK, and it's quite small, but they're massive. You're talking about millions. So all of this is really opening up demand, isn't it?
Well, it is. And if you break it down in parts, let's look at the domestic market first. So the domestic market today is a market which already is growing way beyond only the big metros. So if we look to our network, and that's where we differentiate, I guess, from some other low-cost airlines in the world. You know, we fly 20 times a day between Delhi and Mumbai. That's not a classical, mm-hmm. you know, those are the two largest cities of the country. We do 14 a day between Delhi and Hyderabad. We do a similar number between Delhi and Bangalore. So there's an enormous sort of frequency between the metros itself, the six metros. But next to that, we have developed a huge connectivity with all the other tier two and tier three cities. And you're absolutely right, John. Tier two and tier three are cities of sizes which sort of are larger than Amsterdam or quite a few cities in the UK itself. But there, again, the amount of people traveling, and last year there was like anywhere between 150 and 160 million domestic customers, which is still, looking at the size of population, a relatively small number. So we expect that to continue, and the government is investing seriously in multiple airports, multiple new airports. Other important point which I would like to highlight there is, you know, Indian airports were not present, probably with the exception of Delhi, in the top 20 airports of the world. And that, for the country with the largest population in the world, one, and two, soon to be the third largest economy in the world, São Paulo has two airports. Shanghai has multiple, London, Paris, New York. So everywhere we find multiple airports, but not in India. So that is changing rapidly. And I think some of the decisions of the government to start building on that have been really supporting that spin off economically for so domestic will continue to grow. International, you're absolutely right. There's the large, probably the largest diaspora in the world, are from Indian origin, and literally all over the place. Not only diaspora, but also massive number of students international. So whenever we open new flights, and we recently started flying between Delhi and Azerbaijan, which one would say there's not too much traffic between Delhi and Azerbaijan, but we started cautiously with 3 a week, and we jumped up to 7 actually in a couple of months. So we see an enormous opportunity there to start connecting. So that's the second part of that, beside the domestic, is the international. I think certainly is some of the connectivity traffic where India previously hardly played any role in connectivity. We see more and more passengers now connecting through Indian hubs and gateways. And for us, it's incredibly exciting to have those three elements, domestic, international, and connectivity, as three strong pillars of the development of our network and customer bases.
And within that, Peter, I guess there are different reasons for travel. I mean, of course, there's leisure travel, and a number of airlines have talked about coming out of COVID, this rise in premium leisure travel, which is good for airlines' bottom lines, more people willing to travel in premium cabins. I know in my day as a network planner, if you looked at India, it was always, of course, a high volume market, but typically low yield. But I think that is changing, isn't it? There is much more demand for premium cabins. And maybe the business travel aspect is perhaps different too. Be interested to know what your thoughts are here, because some airlines have said business travel has reduced coming out of COVID. There's more online contact, but my impression, and mentioning again, I haven't actually been to India, but it's always struck me as a culture that face to face is very important. So that if it comes to business travel, you're more likely to get on with your business colleagues and make progress in dealings if you're face to face.
Yeah, well, let me get that out of the way, John. You should come to India.
I want to.
Whatever is happening there in many spaces, but surely the one I'm of course most familiar with in space of aviation is just impressive. Whenever I have foreign visitors visiting our training center where we train 2,000 people a day, see our turnaround time 35 minutes, where they see the massive infrastructure being created, it's really eye-opening and has nothing to do anymore with some of the preconceived images which there is every now and then on what's there in India when it comes to aviation. Having said all that, India probably is still one of the most competitive markets in the world when it comes to airfares. That's where our third customer promises in terms of affordable fares remains an absolute importance. So I would say it's a very value-based economy for sure. So I guess companies who want to be successful in India, first of all, need to have a certain skill. Secondly, need to have low cost, and three, prepare to offer value for money, because the Indian consumers are demanding yet very price sensitive. So, and that's. But against that backdrop, I would see it almost as an asset and a positive for IndiGo, because that means that the moment you can do that on a domestic level, you should be able to do it international as well, and then all the same parameters would apply and can make us successful to operate in that space. India is changing also here, because again, with the growth of the economy, with the rise of the small and medium enterprises, it's an incredible entrepreneurial society. If you take places like Bangalore, where IT is booming, and not only the big conglomerates, but a lot of new entrepreneurs. A lot of Indian diaspora, by the way, coming back and starting their businesses there as well. So we have seen actually quite a change from a, I would say, pure price driven to also a lot of frequent travelers, and again, especially on our metro to metro routes, where there's a lot of business. So with that, we have announced that we will start a form of a premium product, a business product catered to what we have labeled as the nation's busiest and business routes. We haven't yet disclosed precisely what routes, but it speaks to the change which is happening all over the world, and also very much so, I would say, in India, where with the rise of the economy, the changing need of the consumers, the fact that people have more money to spend, that the purchasing power is going up, that a form of still cost competitive and value for money premium product will be there. So we've made that announcement. People are very excited about it, that now we'll have the product offering as well for the Indian consumers.
And I guess also as well as that kind of value focus, you've got the young generation. They themselves are, very tech savvy. They've got rising disposable incomes, and they love, and certainly in my experience of talking with young Indians, they love travel. So you've got that driver into the future.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why this is such an exciting time and such a privilege, really, to be in India and to, with my team, to lead the largest airline of the country into that new era of new heights and across new frontiers. And that's the domestic product. And you're right, they love to travel. We recently had a couple of surveys done. Not by us, but in general, and they were really showing the eagerness of people to travel. And I just gave the example of Azerbaijan, but in that same time frame, that was August last year, we opened Baku, Tbilisi, Almaty, Tashkent. We did Bali, we do Nairobi, and we have a few more heading up for the year ahead. And all these flights actually are warmly welcomed by people to go. And we see that quite a few countries in the region who ease their visa requirements or do away with it totally for Indian consumers are just being warmly welcomed and visited by Indian consumers. And that's a young generation. That's also, and that's like super exciting to see, that's a generation taking their parents for a first time on an international trip. And if you see that happening, so giving wings to the nation by connecting people and aspirations is not just a slogan. It's actually what we see on board of our 2,000 daily flights every day.
And we touched on aircraft orders to support this. You've got substantial orders in for more A320 family aircraft, which is the heart of your fleet now, and regional aircraft, turboprop aircraft to serve some of those domestic regional markets. But recently, you announced an order for 30 Airbus A350, which of course is a long-haul aircraft, a wide-bodied aircraft, very much state of the art in the decades ahead for long-haul operations. And although I know at the time we're talking, you haven't said anything in detail about where those aircraft will go, but of course we've touched on diaspora. You've invested in these long-haul aircraft, but I guess, as you said, the world in some ways is becoming your oyster as you change that fleet mix in the years and decades ahead.
Yeah, I mean, our fleet is today we have a little short of 50 ATR that serves the really smaller communities, and the government of India is having a very effective scheme in place where sort of air connectivity to the smaller communities is encouraged. So those 50, a little short of 50 ATR are very much sort of playing that role and feeding the larger metros also with some connectivity. Then the very heart of the operation, indeed, as you mentioned, John, is the Airbus 320 family operating, which covers our domestic network and covers our international network. We have a total, a little short of 1,000 of them on order. We have some 350-ish in operation and total fleet in operation. But if we look, so that's including the 50. If we look to that fleet order, that's incredibly important. That means for the decade ahead, we get one new plane coming in every week. We made the announcement to double in size towards the end of the decade. So today's 300 will go more like 600-ish by the end of the decade. We have all the flexibility to go up or to go down depending on how economy will further grow and further develop. But that's really the path forward for us. So this doubling towards the end of the decade is the foundation. Then we have made the earlier decision to have the XLR, the 321 XLR, that will help us to already start stretching that range both by creating new connectivity as well as emphasizing existing connectivity. My favorite example there, today we fly out of Mumbai into Nairobi. We cannot make Delhi Nairobi or Ahmedabad Nairobi. So with the XLR, we can make those routes. And that would be really solidifying our position in some of these internationals. But we felt that with the rise of India and the fact that India today, leave alone IndiGo for a moment, but India today is having a similar number of wide bodies as the Netherlands. And that in itself, looking at the size of the country
It's incredible.
and the size of the economy, so not only the country and population, but even the size of the economy. So we feel there's an enormous opportunity for us to start building on that. So we took this step, which is indeed for the companies is a new step. Planes will be delivered as from 27. So that still gives us a couple of years to prepare for that. But against that backdrop, you will see, and I sometimes compare it with a balloon, where we gradually start to expand the range. We start at typically close by India areas, such as the Middle East and Southeast Asia. We move now to Africa and Central Asia. The XLR will bring us to the shores of Europe and further into Asia. And clearly, the wide body can bring us to pretty much anywhere we want, from anywhere we want in India.
And certainly that traffic on the further flung parts of the world has long been there. Just thinking back in our mutual histories, whether it's KLM or in my case also British Airways in the network planning role, these kind of airlines were always grabbing Indian traffic from India to US and Canada as examples. We see so too has the Gulf carriers have been able to enjoy that traffic as well. So when you describe that not only the metrics of the size of a country, but its growth and the fact that people want to travel, young people taking their parents on trips for the first time, that opportunity is enormous, isn't it? As you said, it's interesting the comparison you made with the wide body fleet size compared with the Netherlands.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there, John. And we do not only share part of the history with the same company, but I guess also shared passion for network planning in and indeed for the years I've been doing network planning. We're always looking at these traffic flows. And I mean the sheer amount of people traveling is there, and I believe it will continue to grow. And today, basically a lot of connecting traffic, if I may call it like that, has been outsourced to outside India. And I think we have a great opportunity to start making that connectivity in India itself. And we have a fantastic domestic network connecting today to 88 domestic destinations. That number will rise in the years ahead. And we could connect those to the Indian metros and then fly to these international points directly from the Indian metros. And I think that's a great benefit for our customers and will enable even further growth of that business towards the future.
And like you, Peter, that passion and what you described as this exciting time, I find it amazing at this point in my life, my own career, to look at what's happening in the world. Because I talked about old Europe before, where we both come from, and we're looking for challenges there. It seems to me that we're getting more and more constrained in Europe, but other parts of the world are growing enormously, and the shift in capacity. There are large orders coming from yourselves in India, Air India too, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the Gulf carriers. This seems to be the kind of the playground or the center of action for the future. Do you share that view? Is that your view too about the dynamics or the mix is changing around the world?
No, of course. I mean, the numbers are pointing clearly in that direction. But beside the numbers, I think what's very interesting, then we had those years, I guess, in different parts of the world, different other parts of the world as well, where aviation was widely seen and recognized. And I like the way how I think it was Tony Tyler who always said aviation is a force for good when he was heading IATA. And that is being widely recognized here. And there's a couple of independent ICAO and some other studies which prove a very strong correlation. I believe they have some numbers where every dollar or rupee which is being invested in aviation turns into three when it comes into the overall economic effect. And every job being created in aviation turns into six when it comes to jobs. So if the agenda is driven by we should bring our society forward and aviation is an integral part of that, then you really get, if you wish, a positive momentum between, economic growth and aviation. Aviation leads to economic growth, and economic growth itself supports the aviation, and you get a positive cycle, really. And that positive cycle is, I would say, widely recognized in India, because it's not only airlines. You see, investments are being made in production centers, investments are being made in research, investments are being made in the education. So the entire ecosystem is basically benefiting from that growth. So you're absolutely right. It's probably the last frontier in the world where a aviation development like this is happening, and the combined orders of IndiGo and our two main competitors when it comes to fleet orders last year, Air India and Akasa. If you take the sum of these orders just from an Indian aviation landscape, that in itself proves the room to development and further growth.
What about the challenge against that, Peter, that we both know about and the industry's got to face, that of sustainability, because it's the biggest thing which all airlines are wrestling with. On the one hand, bringing in more efficient aircraft of the kind that you're using, which have much reduced fuel burn, lower emissions, but of course is somewhat, well, more than outweighed by the growth in total volume. And what you described there is a natural rationale in India, the need for air travel, both within the country with its distances and around the world, whether it's for business or leisure. How do we overcome this kind of a contradiction? The growth is producing emissions. We try to go down the path of resolving that, but we can't throw away the economic enabling role that aviation is delivering and will deliver even more in the decades ahead.
Yeah, well, probably a couple of points. So for us being such a young airline, and we were recently again recognized as the airline with the airline with more than 100 planes having the youngest fleet. So we are sort of heading the charge by our youngest fleet when it comes to just emissions per mile or per passenger. So that's an important part, and the fact of not having a legacy there is very helpful. There's no old fleet to be replaced. Every fleet we add is young and new fleet making use of modern technology. So that's one. Two, we continue to invest a lot in all kind of operational procedures, and I think I shared it with you before in my former role. The fact that we're still not having a single European airspace is putting a lot of these sustainability discussions in a bit of a different spotlight, I would say. On the one hand side, there's a lot of pressure to move forward. On the other side, something relatively simple as a single European sky, which would help by what 10% saving, is still not there. So in India, we spend a lot of time, and actually we work closely with the government and the other airlines to continue to make sure that the operations are done in the most efficient and most optimal way. So I think these two elements, new planes, new technology, and optimal procedures, are the short-term bets one could put on. I think when it comes to new generation fuel, the jury is still out if SAF is really the way forward or not. The amounts needed for the overall transition are probably at the detriment of something else. So the jury is still out, and we should do whatever we could and we can, but we still have to see. I know that the manufacturers are, and especially I think Airbus has been rather vocal on building also a new generation aircraft there for the shorter distances. So
Using hydrogen, I think, isn't it?
yeah, and but that brings me back to probably the start of your question. At the end of the day, all that innovation is incredibly costly, and a lot of money is needed for that. And that's where I would say my view on all kind of taxation discussions is coming. And firstly, if anything, it should be done on a global basis. And secondly, if one wants to do that, that should be used to reinvest it in research and innovation to really make sure that's been spent to develop that new generation aircraft. Because looking back to even to the COVID time, I think if anything as a lesson could be drawn from it is that people want to move, people want to fly, people want to go. And all the predictions, and I'm sure you remember that, John, when COVID was just there, you know, the world would change forever and people would stop flying and we would all be doing Teams and Zoom and what have you in meeting. Look at where we are today. Traffic is pretty much back everywhere in my country, India. It's far above pre-COVID levels, but it just shows the human nature, that desire for mobility. And I think we should just embrace that part and make sure that we do it in the most sustainable way. And that in itself is a challenge, but I believe that human nature has demonstrated time over time that we're able to develop technology and innovation dealing with that.
Well, from what I've seen, not least in preparing for our talk today, Peter, that India does have a very positive attitude and is seemingly pretty well placed in all the other things it's developing in. It can do the same in terms of championing investment in biofuels and alternative fuels. I believe the current Minister of Transport is keen to see the adoption of green hydrogens and biofuels as future fuels, not only in aviation, but more widely.
Yeah, again, India is moving at a speed which is for sure seen in India. I would say sometimes seen outside, sometimes not seen outside, but to some extent it's moving anyway, whether it's seen or not. You know, if you have a country with 1.5 billion people, it's important that you make sure that you have the infrastructure in place to address all the needs of the society. And clearly, the energy transition is an integral part of it, but not a separate part of it. And therefore, some of the initiatives which you describe are very much there. And I'm sure that brings me back to the ecosystem point. We are sort of part of that. And the moment you have airlines which are part of the global aviation system, you'll also be able to make a contribution in this part.
I guess we have to keep pushing to get that more global approach all around, politically as well as within the industry. And if you and I look at what would have been unimaginable 2 or 3 years ago, Amsterdam Schiphol, facing night bans on flights, slot reductions, it just seems, it leaves me incredulous in terms of knowing that history and success that we both were part of in KLM.
Yeah, well, I promised myself leaving KLM and Amsterdam not to sort of reflect too much about what's going on in Amsterdam, but you're right. The discussions taking place there at this point in time are first of all not very predictable. They go pretty much anyway and anywhere. And if anything, for aviation business, you need to have a long-term view. You know, we're ordering planes today. I think our 350 example is a great example. We took the decision today in 24. We get the planes in 27. Some other lead times are even longer, and then we're going to operate them for the next, what, 15 year. So you need to have a predictability and reliability in terms of, you know, what climate will you be operating in terms of aviation. And that sense, I think, is a part where I could only encourage my old country or my country where I come from to have a predictable and consistent and reliable operating environment for the airlines, because at the end of the day it brings jobs, it brings a lot of economic benefits. And yes, of course you need to balance that you know, disruptions and what it does to the environment and noise and so on with what are the benefits. But it needs to have a very sound policy and again, most of all, most importantly, a predictable policy.
Just another couple of points I'd like to cover before we have to draw to a close, Peter. Manpower and technology. I mean, technology, as you mentioned earlier, India is leading the world, whether it's Bangalore, Hyderabad, so many companies, so many entrepreneurs working in IT. But tying that in with this massive young population of energized people, is IT, is technology going to be there to support us in the future and use of AI, or is there a risk of it being destructive. I mean, India, of all places, it has both the energy in the sector and it has the ability to automate things. Which way is it going to go?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, John. And I think that's where IndiGo, India, but let me speak on IndiGo, is also very well positioned for this aviation boom. Because there's a lot of jobs in the aviation which are there today, and they will be there tomorrow, and they will be there the day after tomorrow. We have cabin attendants and pilots today, they're there tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. We have mechanics today, tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow. There's check-in staff and maybe optimized a little bit here and there, but that's there. So you need to have people. That's why I love this business so much. At the end of the day, it's people's business. You need to have people to do that job. And there, the young population of India is not only a great asset when it comes to our customers for today and tomorrow, but also very much so for our employees. We have hiring rounds and training rounds where we really hire hundreds of people in one time, and then we all train them, and which is a great, because they come in as, and I'm always extremely excited to see that some come in sort of young, unexperienced, and ready for their first job, and then when they have been flying with us for a couple of years, they move on in life with a wealth of experience, which is great. So we have that, and we'll continue to have that for the years ahead. At the same time, indeed, if India is home, one should have a top-notch leading IT, digital, AI type of background. That's not something we typically had. So we are really investing in that part today. And again, there, our location, I would say, is extremely helpful. So all the features which will be there in terms of better digital interfacing for us is basically all going to be home built, being in India built and in India developed and in India geared, and that's really is helpful. So I would see those two trends, which probably at some other parts of the world due to demographics or whatever other reason are a bit more under pressure. For us, we don't have to choose between either or. We can do really both, and that will help us in propelling forward.
One of the young guys I speak to who is in the industry and done a number of commercial jobs, both within and out of India, as a native Indian, said to me, I will always want to go back to India because it's optimistic. It's an optimistic place to be, which you mentioned earlier on. So I think that sums it up very nicely. And within that young workforce, another challenge for the industry as a whole globally is the diversity in the role of women. Just looking through what IndiGo said about itself as a business, that seems to be something that you're way ahead of the curve on in all parts of a business, not least the pilot force, Peter.
Yeah, that's something which is fantastic, and I'm embarking on a journey which the company started long ago. So I think it's really deeply rooted in the company DNA, because these things you don't change overnight. So that's deeply rooted. So today we pride ourselves having the highest percentage of female pilots in the world. We're around 15%, 15, which is, I think the global average is 5. We are 15. Is it enough? No, it's not enough, but it clearly shows. And we have a whole range of policies in place to further support that. And some of these elements stretch further than just IndiGo. It's also how sort of the Indian society and aviation society looks to that. So that's a high share. We have something what we call girl power, which is really a great way of sort of enabling, empowering female staff and leaders. We have a whole range of programs in place, and we recently took a whole sort of re-energizing of that concept, which resonated very well. Where we still have work to do is on, I would say, female leadership that's growing. I wish to grow it more, but I would say that's one of the many initiatives we're doing on that part. And coming back to the earlier point, as an airline, especially an airline of our size, we have 35,000-ish people at IndiGo, and then there's another couple of 10,000 in the supporting companies. You're an integral part of the society. So we do a lot of things when it comes to being part of the society. And You talked earlier about sustainability, and I always love to broaden that more to CSR rather than just sustainability. And we do a lot of things in terms of female empowerment, education, working with the underprivileged kids, and even the DEI programs we're having. You may have seen that, but we have quite a few people now. I think it's a little short of 200, anywhere between 150 and 200, where people with certain disabilities, some of them can't speak or can't talk. We hire them, they're frontline staff, we train them, their colleagues help them. That's incredibly rewarding to see. So it's nothing to do with girl power itself or diversity, but I would say it just says something about the culture of the company where
An
we want to
inclusive
be.
culture, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we want to be a reflection of society, and that's really energizing.
Well, Peter, our time is nearly up on this episode. Just if you wouldn't mind giving me a final reflection more broadly, looking into that crystal ball I talked about at the beginning, do you think we are facing a new world order? As we talk today, we're in a year when there's, I think, a record number of elections, including India. We're seeing a very different political approach. We've seen that back in the Netherlands. We're seeing it in the UK, the US, you name it. Is there a kind of a contradiction between politicians perhaps making things look more national in outlook against, as we've described, populations wanting to travel, wanting to explore and meet each other? Or do you think we are at risk of somewhat closing down in the decades ahead?
I can probably speak best for India and the outlook there. India is on the spot to become the third largest economy in the world by 27. Hand in hand with that third largest economy will be a further growth of aviation, both domestic and international. I think there's been enough proof points of that historically, where growth in GDP leads to growth in aviation. And we've seen that in China probably 15 years ago, we've seen it in Europe longer ago, we've seen it in the US. So that is likely, not likely, that will happen in India as well. And today, IndiGo is the seventh largest airline in the world in terms of daily departures. Again, if home is world's most populous nation, and if home is soon to be the third largest economy in the world, that position. And that is substantiating our fleet orders, both the domestic, the narrow body and the wide body one. That is substantiating our fleet orders. So if you speak about the new world order in terms of aviation, clearly Indian carriers and IndiGo surely being one of them are taking their place in the global space. And again, that's a reflection, I would say, of where the country is today, and even more so where it's heading to.
Because it seems to me, not only young Indians, but all young people I speak to, maybe it's not a representative sample, they do want to travel, and the digital age has only opened people's eyes more to what is on offer around the world.
Oh, but that's absolutely true. Again, John, we have seen all the predictions that COVID, the world would change. It doesn't. In essence, it doesn't, and it won't. And I've never believed in any of these predictions. The only question was when will it come back, not if, but when. I think if we have seen anything, it has just come back even faster than was predicted. So that is there, and that's young people, that's families, that's people traveling for the first time, that's people doing their business, and we'll only see that growing forward. So I'm very confident that that human nature of curiosity and exploring, and some people who can elaborate on that much better than I do, go back in history, how people always wanted to explore new horizons and go around. I think that's there very much to stay. And then for us as mankind, we need to see how we make that manageable. How do we deal with that in terms of sustainability, in terms of managing the flows of tourism, in terms of dealing with some of the side effects? But the human nature is there. Therefore, I'm confident that we will be able to find solutions one way or the other for the various sort of consequences these type of things are having.
Well, Peter, on that very optimistic note, I'd like to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed chatting to you about IndiGo. Knowing you as I do, I can hear not just the enthusiasm, but the passion and sincerity in what you say. So, Peter Elbers, CEO of IndiGo, many thanks for your time today.
Thank you, John. And I look forward to welcoming you in exciting Delhi and see our facilities up there.
I look forward to being there.
Thank you.
Thanks to you for listening, and I hope we've offered some insightful debate today about the shape of our future skies, viewed particularly from an Indian perspective. I'll be back soon with our next Our Future Skies episode in partnership with AIG. But for now, from me, John Strickland, it's goodbye.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast series are those of the speakers and do not reflect the views, policy, or position of American International Group, Inc., or its subsidiaries or affiliates, AIG. Any content provided by the speakers in this podcast series is their opinion and is not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or group of individuals, or anyone or anything. AIG makes no warranty or representations as to the accuracy, completeness, correctness, or validity of any information provided during this podcast series, and AIG will not be liable for any errors, inaccuracies, or omissions in the information provided during this podcast series, or any damages, losses, liabilities, injuries resulting from or arising from the podcast, including your use of the podcast.